6 o'clock, so 2025 Columbia Police Review Board meeting. Call to order. As we've done in the past, we'll start from left to right and just have everyone introduce themselves. We've got a few new faces up here on the dais. Go ahead.
My name's Earl Krause. I'm with the City Law Department, and I'm here to talk about Sunshine Law tonight.
Paul Dickinson, CPD.
Denise Blazek, member of the board.
Maury Bland, member of the board.
Stephanie Coleman, board member. I'll get it out.
Ed Robinson, member of the board.
Doug Hunt, board member.
Steve Jeffrey, board member.
Steph Yocum, Human Rights Commission.
Harry Castillo, board member.
Rose Woodmire, Law Department.
Wonderful. Happy New Year, everyone. So with that, the agenda. Everyone has looked at the agenda. Anyone have any comments? If not, we'll take a motion to approve said agenda.
I'll second that.
Second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that passes. How about the approval of the December 11th, 2024 minutes? Any questions, comments? If not, I'll take a motion to approve.
That we approve those.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Wonderful. Moving right along. So special items here. Looks like we have some Sunshine Law training. Is Earl Krause present? Okay, terrific. You're going to give us a presentation?
Yes, I have some slides that I can run through, which I've looks like it pulled up now.
Okay.
And get started if you like.
Okay, yeah, the floor is yours.
Okay, great. Well, like I said, my name's Earl Krause. I'm with the City Law Department, and I'm assigned Sunshine Law along with a number of other things. And I've put some slides together to go through with you tonight. I tried to balance having enough information that's helpful, but not so much that you're just bored out of your mind. I'm very excited about Sunshine Law. I can talk about it all evening, but I don't think that's what you want to do. I'll run through these. If you have questions as we go, please feel free to ask. There'll be opportunity for questions at the end also. And I brought along some Sunshine Law books that are produced by the Attorney General's office that you're welcome to have. I'll leave those here and you can grab them if you like. If you need more, I have some more. And it includes not only the Sunshine Law, but frequently asked questions, some case law for those who are interested on different issues, and can be pretty helpful. So with that, I'll just jump right in. There we go. So what are we going to talk about? We'll talk about the authority, because, you know, there's some law out there that we point to. Well, it's always important to know what we're pointing to. We'll touch on public meetings mostly, which includes public votes, notices, agenda, minutes. We'll talk about closed meetings, and then at the end we'll touch just a bit on public records. Of course, the Sunshine Law promotes open government. That's the whole point, that meetings be open, records be open, unless there's a specific reason authorized in the law to close it. And that's so that, you know, members of the public can come and listen to and watch what government's doing. They can see ahead of time on the notices what's going to be discussed so that they know, well, that's something I'm interested in, I should go, or I don't care about that, I'm not going to go. And then when they go, that meeting actually occurs, and that's what folks are talking about and deciding on, and they get to watch. So that's really a big item in the Sunshine Law. So our authority. There's a Sunshine Law, which is in Chapter 610 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, RISMO. But there's also the City Code, because the Sunshine Law authorizes, with regard to things being open or closed, authorizes things to be closed, but doesn't require it in the Sunshine Law itself. Other law might, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but it authorizes it to be closed, and then the city has taken action to actually close those things. In section 2-25.1 for closed meetings, and in 25.3 for closed records. And we'll talk a little bit more about that difference as we go. So what's a public meeting? Well, we're in a public meeting. You're a public governmental body. You're discussing public business. You may decide things. You may formulate policy. This is a public meeting. So this, you know, the boards, commissions, subcommittees, quasi-public governmental bodies even fall within the definitions of the Sunshine Law. And of course, we're in an open session right now. We're in person. But if we weren't in person and we were all talking on the phone or via email, that can all still be a meeting if you have a quorum of folks talking business. And you know, these days there's lots of ways to do that. And you can even accidentally fall into a meeting if you're engaged in some way, you know, some social media forum where there's group participation, and then somebody starts talking business and there's a quorum of you there. Well, maybe that turned into a meeting. So that's something to be careful about. Mentioned a quorum. You need a quorum to do business. And then on the flip side of that, you want to avoid accidentally falling into a quorum talking about business. Does include luncheon meetings. If we were all eating food right now, it would still be a meeting. That's often get that question. And like I said, other methods of holding a meeting also can count. But if you have everyone over for a barbecue and you're just talking about the Chiefs, who are awesome, that's not a meeting, even if you're all there. But if during the barbecue you kind of all gather over to a corner and say, hey, how are you going to vote on that thing tomorrow? I want to make sure we have, well, now you're talking business. There's a quorum of you there. That's probably now a meeting. And you didn't post a notice. There's no opportunity for public to attend. So that can violate the Sunshine Law. Stick to the barbecue and Chiefs, I guess, is the advice there. Mm-hmm. All right, so voting. Whether usually, well, I think always for this board in person, they have to be open. That's one of the key things in Sunshine Law, too, is that the public can see the votes and watch the votes and listen to the votes and see the discussion and how people decide. For the city boards and commissions, you have to be vote personally, no proxies. And how many votes do you need to pass something? The standard is one more than half of those present, one more than majority. For some boards, there are special things like certain tax votes that require a different specific number of people of yes votes to pass something. But that's very specific to those boards. And the votes can also be an all in favor type of vote, or a roll call vote. There are some instances where you have to use a roll call vote, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. And if you're ever not sure about which kind of vote to do, a roll call vote is always okay in any instance. It's a little more work sometimes, a little bit, but that's always fine. Oops. There we go. So your notice. There is a notice of this meeting out on the board, the bulletin board in City Hall, like is required. It's also posted on the website, which is required, at least 24 hours in advance of the meeting, unless there's some emergency. There's some magic language for that. And if you don't meet that time frame, you can't go forward with the meeting, or you would be in violation of the Sunshine Law if you did. And that even happened to City Hall a little while back, or City Hall, City Council a little while back, where sometimes things happen. They missed getting the notice up in time, and they had to push the meeting to Tuesday because it wasn't up in time. And that was the right thing to do, because otherwise they'd be failing to comply with the Sunshine Law. And if you're holding a meeting in a place other than City Hall, you also have to post it at that location at least 24 hours ahead of time, that here's where it's going to be held and the same agenda, essentially, to keep the public informed. And that notice needs to include, of course, the date and the time of the meeting, where it's being held, the method of the meeting. Generally, the default is in person, but if you're doing another board, we're doing an internet Zoom meeting or something like that, or a phone call, you need to include that information and how the public can observe. Of course, the tentative agenda for open meetings, that's supposed to reasonably advise the public of the matters to be considered. Doesn't have to be the absolute final agenda, but pretty close. And there's some case law pending right now, as a case submitted that we're waiting for the decision for out of the Western District Court of Appeals that talks about what's sufficient for a tentative agenda. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that says. And of course, there needs to be a provision for the public to observe, to attend and observe the meeting, the open sessions anyway. Minutes are required under the Sunshine Law. You have to have, I think the next slide has what all you have to include. And that's to record what decisions are made at the meetings, right? So if someone sees a notice, they are very interested but are unable to attend, they can wait until the minutes are out and approved, and they can ask for those minutes and get the minutes and see what happened at the meeting, or at least certainly what decisions were made, if any. The other stuff in the minutes, the date and the time of the meeting, you know, very similar to the notice, the place, the members present or absent, and all votes taken have to be in the minutes. A lot of boards and commissions will include other information in the minutes, like this was discussed, this member really stressed this, this was a contentious issue, and here's where everyone was on that. That's all very helpful as a business practice. So then 6 months from now, you can go, what did we talk about at that January meeting? Oh, remember, well, it says in the minutes. Those things aren't required for Sunshine Law compliance, but they can be a pretty good practice just for managing your work. So a lot of boards do that. And like I mentioned before, in the minutes, if there was some kind of emergency meeting held for some reason, you didn't meet the 24-hour time frame and you had a reason compliant with the statute for doing that, there's some magic language to put in there explaining what that was. So on to closed meetings. All meetings are presumed to be open and are supposed to be open unless you can point to something in the law that lets you close it. And there are lots of different reasons. And then that's in the statute. City code has provided that meetings may be closed under the statute and has provided that records shall be closed as provided in the statute. A little bit different there. Oops. Okay, so what are all the reasons? Well, here they are. And what I've tried to set out here is all the different exemptions for which either meetings or records can be closed. It's the same list. And the items here, you'll see there's 1, 2, 3 different slides. There'll be a brief quiz at the end of this. No, I'm kidding. but all these items, the items in white are, all of these are in the state statute, first off. The ones in white text are also in city code. The ones that aren't, either aren't in city code or there's some note that I have on here about them. So for example, real cause, common reasons to go into closed session is litigation, number one. You want to discuss pending litigation that involves you or whatever board is doing it, that's a reason. Or you got to, considering purchasing some real estate for some boards maybe. Discipline of employees, that kind of thing. Pretty common. The city does not have a state militia, number four, so that's not, they didn't adopt that one. They don't need that. So we go on to competitive bidding at 11, that's, and sealed bids, number 12, that's pretty common for some boards. One that's probably bigger for you guys is 14, protected by other laws. Any other law out there that says things should be closed or confidential, it's covered in Sunshine Law under sub 14. And I think you guys probably run into that with, is it 590-502? Be your other law, where you may close a meeting under 610-021 sub 14 and 590-502 RISMO. And that can also be other things like HIPAA for some entities can fall under that. Some national security things can fall under that. It really can be a lot of different stuff. All right. Security systems, credit card numbers, those kinds of things, closed. The last three are not in city code. The very last one was recently passed because the Sunshine Law is changed sometimes by the legislature. It was changed in 2022. The city has not adopted that as of yet. A couple extra things. Here we go. So also in city code regarding meetings, this is funny. They kind of have a catch-all. There's all the items and the exemptions we just went over that the city has adopted or hasn't adopted. But then the city has also said any other subject, which might be under the Sunshine Law, you can also use as a reason to close a meeting. So there's a catch-all there. And then also very specifically for meetings and records, financial data regarding applicants for housing rehabilitation assistance. Probably something you won't run into here. So we've talked about, you know, what you need to go into close. How do you do it? Well, you got to put it on your notice, your tentative agenda. You're planning to go into close to talk about something under one of these exemptions. And then at the meeting, you announce that you're going to go into closed session. Like, for example, here I've got 610-021 sub 14 and 590-502 RISMO. Get a motion for that, a second, a majority of a quorum voting for closing that. To go into closed session, it has to be a roll call vote and record each of those votes. And then every vote in closed session also has to be a closed vote. And I believe that's so that it gets a record in those closed minutes, which public may not be able to access today, but sometime in the future, they may be able to. Some things are closed for a while and then they become open later. And so that allows a recording of each member's vote on each item, yay or nay, in the closed session. During the closed session, I already said you recall the vote, you record the votes, but then you also have to stick to the reason you went into closed session. So if you go into closed session for 610-021 sub 14 and 590-502, and then you exhaust those items, and you go, now wait, before we go back into open, I want to talk about this personnel thing. That wasn't one of the reasons you cited. That is out of bounds for your closed session. Now you can go in closed and cite multiple reasons. We've got litigation we're going to talk about. We've got our normal business we're going to talk about in closed. We got personnel thing we're going to talk about. We've got a sealed bid thing we've got to talk about. You can cite all of those things, and then that allows you to talk about each of those in closed. But if you didn't cite it, you can't talk about it. And where that most often comes up, there's not, you know, typically, you know, nefariousness going on. Sometimes someone might say, hey, earlier in open we were talking about X. What did you mean by that before we get back in open? Now you've moved to another topic. And so, you know, the person was just looking for clarity, but that's changing topics. It's not authorized under the Sunshine Law, so try to avoid that. All right, the next slide kind of transitions to public records, which I'll just touch on just very briefly. All these themes and exemptions we've been talking about up to now also apply to public records. Well, what is a record? Really, it's any record that has been retained, meaning the city has it. and you as members of a public governmental body have it. And that counts, really. So that can be, you know, a lot of people think of this as a record. Emails are a record. Arguably, texts can be a record. Voicemail recordings can be a record. Presentation is a record. Like, really, anything can be a record. It doesn't have to even be written. It can be verbal and recorded, or, you know, some other type of record. And for proper record keeping, I think oftentimes staff will send things out to everyone on the board, and they may blind copy everyone so that you don't accidentally hit reply all, then respond to everyone in the group about the business, and now you've had a meeting. You've had back and forth between a quorum, and oops, had a meeting, dang it. Well, so staff will usually blind copy everyone, so you can't reply all, and that's why, so you don't fall into that. But talking about, you know, emailing folks, there is a provision in 610.025 that requires that if you do email a majority of the body, including your, which includes yourself, that number, you are required to also include in that message, well, it says the public office computer, that's pretty old language, or the custodian of records. Really, that means your staff person, mm-hmm. Rose, probably, at this point anyway. And that's so that, you know, when there are, say, for example, records requests, that record is now somewhere that the city can find it and provide it to folks who are entitled to it, who ask for it. It's an open public record, probably. So be aware of that. An even better practice than even doing that at all, and, you know, others might have thoughts on this or correct me, but is to not do that at all at any time, and instead get with your staff person and say, hey, I want to ask the committee this, or communicate this to the committee. How can I do that? And they'll probably say, let me do that for you. And then they'll get what you want to communicate. They'll put it together. They'll send it out to the group, blind copying everybody so there's no accidental meetings, or including it in materials for the next meeting, whichever is appropriate. And that can be a way safer practice that keeps you from stepping into trouble. So.
And if I could interrupt, that's what I do ask you to do, is if you want something sent to the whole group, send it to me. Just say, please send this to the group, and I will forward it out, and you'll receive it with the group as a blind copy.
This is really insightful, if I can interrupt, too, because I was wondering why you were blind copying. But in lieu of, you know, not being blind copied, will the public have requests to have information on, you know, what's being communicated, so they have access to my emails exchange and that type of thing? How would that work?
Well, an email that you send to Rose about board business is now going to be on the city's network, and certainly is going to be a record under the Sunshine Law, and depending on what it's about, it might be open, it might be closed. It's going to be presumed to be open, but there may be an exemption it falls under that makes it closed if someone asks for it. And typically, folks will, I mean, pretty unusual to get a request for a specific email. It does happen. But more often it's, I'd like emails or any communication about X. And then we'll have to do a search and see if what all communications and records fall within whatever X is, using certain search terms. Get the potentially responsive records, see which one of those are actually responsive, and then of those that are responsive, are any of them closed because they fit an exemption? And we do that on every single request that comes in. The police get a whole lot of Sunshine Law requests every day. We have staff dedicated to just doing that. We have a whole monitoring system to track to facilitate the requests coming in from the public and then responding back out to them. Sometimes there's cost, you generate an invoice, and you have to pay the invoice first, and then the records are provided. it's a whole thing.
And if I can add, if I know the contents of the email is confidential, you will see that in the email in the regarding line. It'll say confidential. As far as boards and commissions, you all do see quite a number of confidential emails, as well as have, you know, closed meetings on occasion, and you have closed records that you deal with. In the history of the board, which was originally, the original board was appointed in 2009 and started hearing cases in 2010, we have on occasion received sunshine requests for individual board and commission members' emails. So that's why when you join the board in that initial email or one of our beginning conversations, I would have suggested that you might want to establish an email account just for your board business so that you know that all your board emails are separate from your personal. You don't have to do it that way, but just make sure, you know, if we do get one of those sunshine requests, you will most likely then have to sort through what's board, what's personal, what's work, that sort of thing. So I would suggest think about what makes your life the easiest, and if you want to change your email address on file, let me know and I'd be happy to.
That's great advice.
That's.
So we got penalties on here, not to scare anyone, but everyone always asks about, well, what's the penalties? What happens? And so I've got them listed here, and we'll talk about them a little bit. You know, a knowing violation, and these are just terms in the statute, and there's case law to talk about what they are. But knowingly is $1,000 per violation, up to $1,000 per violation. For a purposeful violation, which is worse, is up to $5,000 per violation. This does say it's and applies to a public governmental body, and it does say or a member. Not typically how these things go, but the statute does provide for it with regard to an individual member. And of course, this would be after there's a complaint, it isn't resolved satisfactorily to the person who might file suit, a lawsuit is filed, it's fully litigated, a year and a half, 2 years later, you have a judgment from a judge. Judge finds, yes, there was a knowing or purposeful violation. Here's the monetary penalty of $1,000 per or $5,000 per. And there's costs and attorney's fees awarded, which is $168,000.42. It's going to be way bigger than the monetary penalty. But then also importantly, the judge can, doesn't have to, but can void the action that was taken in violation of the Sunshine Law. So let's say you approved, this board wouldn't do this, but let's say you approved some kind of a contract or something. It's been in place for 2 years. It's voided now. That vendor is probably going to be pretty upset about that because it's caused by the violation of the city. And so now maybe you got more litigation going on. And it's embarrassing and it looks bad and it's not compliant with the law, which is the goal. And so, you know, there's the penalties. All right. Oh, here's you guys. 9 members, 8 appointed by City Council and 1 by the Commission of Human Rights. 5 constitute a quorum. Then your city codes and a statutory provision, too, regarding your board. Staff liaison is your friend. If you're not sure about something or how to do something or how to communicate or how this meeting's going to work, closed, open, stuff like that, talk to your staff person. They want to help you with these things. So we're very, very serious about that. Questions? Thoughts?
Two clarifications. I think I know the answer. They're almost the same question, Earl. Sub-quorum meetings, that is, four people getting together on the board to discuss, are not covered by the Sunshine Law, is that correct? Unless there is an intent to get around the Sunshine Law by piecing
that
together.
That's it, yes. 4 is not a quorum, 5 is. So if you don't have 5, you don't have a quorum, right? However, if you meet with 4 and then you meet with, and you talk about a specific issue, you meet with 3 more, talk about that same issue. You meet with the last few, talk about that issue. Got everybody lined up for the next meeting. Boy, that sounds like a violation of the Sunshine Law to me, even though you never really had a quorum. So.
And the second one, and this just actually applied more to another board that I sit on, where there's always a question whether a quorum is going to appear on a given night.
Right.
So you call a meeting, you're one short of a quorum. Can you sit around and talk for a while? Or is that like, because you called a public meeting, you shouldn't be doing that?
The recommendation is that you not, because it's so easy to step into a problem doing that. If you had discussions, it looks like a public meeting. People are going to perceive that a public meeting is going on anyway, and you're just ignoring the law. There wouldn't be minutes or anything for that meeting, so no one's making a record of anything that's happening because it's not a meeting. Later at a real meeting, which is actually a quorum, you'd have to have all that same discussion again, because those that are there discussing it, they remember that and they have that in your head, and you're not going to differentiate that was at this non-meeting and this other discussion was at this meeting and that meeting. So it really does matter and does count. Count towards discussions and content. It is not a meeting, but boy, it can really get you in hot water. So, and if you're going to have to re-talk about all of it again anyway, just, you didn't have a quorum, that's it. Go on your merry way. Another question we have sometimes is, say you have exactly a quorum and it's a long meeting. Members have to use the restroom sometimes. But you don't want to take a break. One person gets up and walks out. Well, the meeting should stop. Quorum has been lost. It's no longer a meeting from that point forward. But the person can come back, rejoin the meeting. You have a quorum again. Now let's all start. And you know, when you have exactly a quorum, that can be an issue. And maybe when you have exactly a quorum, it's a good idea just to take a break and everyone do what they need to do and then come back. When you have, you know, 7, 8, 9 people here, you can afford one person to get up and come back pretty regularly and not have it be a problem.
Well, thank you for the good information. And the brochures for us to take?
Yeah, I'll leave these here. You can take as many as you like. If you know some other folks that need those, you can take those. We get those from the AG's office in a box of 100 at a time and pass them out as we need to and get some more when we need to. So
wonderful.
Can we be emailed a copy of these slides?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably email that out and blind copy everyone.
Yeah. Thank you, Earl.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yep. I'll leave those here. I'm going to take off otherwise.
Okay.
Thank you. If you think of something else, at the end of the slides, here's my contact information. So if you think of something else or have further questions, I am available. And I sit right next to Rose.
So. And Earl, I'll send the email out because I still have your slides on the email you sent me. So I'll just forward it to them.
Okay, appreciate that. All right, thank you.
Right, Earl. Thank you. All right, moving on to old business. The election of the chair. I know we have hunted this for the last couple of months. We have two new members and one old hat that's rejoined us here, who was the previous chair.
The old hat.
And he missed us, so we feel very blessed that you would come back. But at any rate, the question before us, do we want to go down that path? We want to elect a chair tonight. Only member missing is Xavier, but I think he would be okay with electing a new chair. Any thoughts, any comments from anyone? Harry, do you have anything? Mm-hmm. No? Denise?
Is anyone interested in being chair? Let's start there.
Well, my thought would be, and again, please go ahead.
No, listen.
My thought would be, you know, Doug was really getting the swing of things here before he stepped down, and now that he's joined us again, I would be very comfortable giving the mantle back to Doug.
So would I, but I have a question to Doug. part of the reason that you resigned because it was so much pressure there, being the chair? Was it difficult for you?
No, I would not put it that way, Denise, but I'll carry this into the discussion, which is I spent my vacation from the board studying board history and some things about the board policy, which I've sort of began a discussion of with Rose, which would make a pretty substantial difference in how the board operates. And what I'm sort of struggling with is it wise for me to be sitting as chair while I am advocating a fairly substantial change in things? Now, I want to get that on the table in case other people are uncomfortable with that. I can take it either way, but I wanted to, you know. So one thing we could do a number of things. We could punt it down the road until we begin to discuss those possible changes, or. I'm game for anything. I just want to be clear that I'm coming in with an agenda.
Stephanie, any comments? Any thoughts? you had one.
Oh, yeah, Steph had. I don't mind you coming in with an agenda. I mean, there are 9 of us here. If we don't like your agenda, I mean, we're all able to vote the way we're going to vote. I was very satisfied with what you did. You know, you and I have had many conversations, back and forth emails. I would love to see you continue.
I was going to ask, is there anyone else even interested in putting their name in? And I believe none of us existing ones want to do it. So the only question would be for our 2 new members. And then I was going to say, if Doug is currently the only name in the hat, we did really like his experience and trust his judgment, and his reasons for stepping away for a period of time were not due to his duties here. So.
Gentlemen?
Guys, to be honest with you, I'm here to learn, and obviously Doug has had some experience, so I feel comfortable with that as well, so especially with the wisdom that he provides.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I'm the new kid on the block. So.
So you're along for the ride, is that what you're saying?
For a period of time, yes, sir.
Right. Understand.
You don't want to get elected president or anything.
not right off the bat, no. Thank you.
As a chair, rather.
Well, it sounds as though we have a nomination, and that needs to be.
Stephen, did you make the motion?
Yeah, I will make a motion to nominate Douglas as the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board.
I will second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right.
Congratulations. A lot, Doug.
Thank you.
You can run the meeting now.
Oh. For this meeting,
I'm okay.
Prepared.
Okay. That's fine.
Right.
Okay.
I have an agenda.
I do not. So with that in mind, Rose, are we now moving on to the review of the 2024 annual report?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see here. Any discussion? Anybody review the 2024 annual report? Any comments? Any questions?
For those of you who've been on the board, this is an updated version from last time with the membership ending in 2024. As part of that update. So this would go through December 31st, 2024. Other than that, I don't believe we made any other changes to the version you saw last month. And if you do have any changes or want to, you can pass it to next month's meeting. Mm-hmm. You just have to approve it at your February meeting to meet the deadline in the code.
I looked at it last month. I think it looks great.
Yeah.
Yes.
I say we go ahead and vote to approve. All those, yeah. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll give a motion to approve.
Okay.
Coleman. I will second that.
Second. All those in favor of passing the 2024 annual report, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. All right. So let's see.
The next item is the future plans for review of complaints.
Okay. Any discussion, any comments on the future plans for review of complaints?
I have a question. Is it still within our authority to simply request complaints to IA that have been completed?
Yes, you will want to avoid the period of time in which they can still file an appeal with you all. So what you have done in previous years is you would look at the prior year's unappealed complaints, and you can still do that.
So we do not yet have a lot of stuff figured out, but knowing that we could do some of the same processes that we did last year with the audits and stuff is helpful under the new law still. Okay.
I think we avoid calling them audits, but yep. Substantially
they are reviews,
our procedures
yeah.
right. are the same.
Getting some fresh eyeballs on it.
Yeah, getting some fresh eyeballs on it is good. I think just recalling what we've done in the past, when we actually started doing our business substantially, we had working groups so that that we could get through more cases. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly for our new members, it would be good if we would form working groups for the new members to be, working with more experienced members in those groups. That seems logical. A passing thought I had, and this is genuinely a passing thought that came to me today, we have not ordinarily reviewed, using my word very carefully, we've not ordinarily audited, because that was the old days, complaints that were substantiated by the department, where they found they agreed with the complainant. And as an educational thing, particularly for our new members, I wonder about beginning with a small group of complaints that were acted on by the department, that they sustained, the chief finally sustained the complaint. That way, what we're doing is, what does the complaint look like? What is a complaint that's taken seriously enough to be done as a training exercise? And for those of us who have never seen an actually, one that was sustained by the department, it might be interesting to just begin with the first three sustained complaints as a study guide for us. We can look into those as though we were reviewing them. But that thought occurred to me strongly, but it's really like in 5 minutes. So if that doesn't seem like a good idea, there might be other approaches as well.
Well, I think that approach would be beneficial, because in the past, when we have reviewed, we might have found something that they didn't use mm-hmm. that we felt might have been more strongly, even if they still, went with one thing, we might have had something that we would have done that was different. So even looking at the ones that they, agreed on, just trying to take a look to see if there's other areas it could have been.
Right.
We've often found ourselves asking, how on earth was this complaint not substantiated? What is your threshold for substantiating this misbehavior? And seeing some examples of what IA actually construes as being a true violation of policy would be nice. Yeah.
Is that a possibility, Rose?
Yeah, I mean, you could do that. I wanted to clarify, are you talking about the 2024, the first three in 2024?
No, I'm thinking in the pool we would be going fishing in, which would actually be the 2023 complaints, right?
No,
2024, pardon me.
You could
see, when the year changes, yeah. I can never keep it straight. No, the 2024, first three, 2024.
And then
revote on your
change. Right, exactly, yeah.
You want just the first three, regardless of what the allegations are,
It would be, we're not looking at a list, so we don't know. It would be a pity if they were all on the same allegation. So I think maybe ideally it would be the first three that represent different allegations, if you see what I mean. Let's not get three searches and seizures, right? Let's try to get
diversified. Could you show us an example of a substantiated search and seizure complaint?
Paul? Does that work for you?
I need to talk to the chief about it.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
And the slight downside, but I'm not sure that it should stand in our way, is we're not starting on perhaps what in many respects are the most important thing for us to do, which is look at the ones that weren't sustained. But we've got quite a bit of time to work on that. So if we could, you know, do these three and then move on in subsequent months, it'd be really cool, I think, to just start it that way.
Yeah, it'd be good training. But, so.
I agree. I think it would be a really good training opportunity for you all. And then, you know, if the police will arrange the access, then you'll get your access, and the newest members can see what the files look like as they're coming there. And then that would also, I think, give you a really good opportunity to ask good questions as you need to of the police to better understand the thresholds and the processes. So I think it's a really good idea.
Is that anything we need to vote on, or is that something we can move forward on?
You can reach consensus, or you can vote, whichever you'd prefer.
Are we in agreement?
Yeah, an agreement there. All right, well, that takes care of the future plans. I think we've got a good starting point.
Can I add one thing? So what we'll do is, based upon how soon you get the access to, ideally if that comes, you know, within a week, we'll put closed session on next month's agenda so you can discuss them in that closed session. And for the brand new people, that means you look at the stuff before the meeting and then you can talk about it in the closed session part of the meeting. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything for the new members? Is there anything that we need to say to clarify about what this whole process looks like when you're reviewing? We have access to everything that the department looked at, in effect, in reviewing.
What's the volume of the complaints?
So,
you mean how many complaints come in a given year?
Yeah, that the review board will review.
There's no easy answer right now because we used to have X amount, and due to the new state law, that's been drastically diminished. We actually have not received a complaint since late August. Now, complaints are still coming to the police, and Internal Affairs is still addressing them and either substantiating the claim or finding them unfounded, which is what they usually do. Beyond that, things have not been appealed beyond that to us since the passage of that law. What we're discussing here, since it did confuse me a lot when I was first on here, I think this is a really useful tool, and we're not going to use the word audit. Think of yourself as a quality assurance person. You do not have any power to, like, discipline, et cetera, but we can reach in, watch complained about actions, discuss it, and come to a consensus on whether or not we agreed with Internal Affairs or did not. What this is actually different from a traditional police review board complaint, which we do not actually have any of right now, and we have it in a few months, and I'm not quite sure when we would get one, but hopefully soon. So our volume has changed.
The key words that
we're
use
still
are
navigating.
Appeal and complaint, which really confuses things.
Something we're still navigating
that all
of this.
Officially comes to us after the chief has made a preliminary decision is an appeal. That's what Steph is saying. Hasn't been happening very much lately. In terms of raw volume, Rose, you've got the whole history in your head. In round numbers, 100 or so complaints might be come in a year.
Oh,
I think last year we reviewed 17, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the number of complaints because the police department get the complaints and we don't necessarily see the complaints. But each year they'll give you a report. I believe it'll come in the springtime where they'll have the summary of the prior year's number of complaints.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very few complaints actually get appealed to the board. And historically, that I think has gone anywhere between maybe 3 in 1 year up to maybe, I think last year might have been the biggest year with 15, I think it was in the annual report.
Yeah.
And if you want to see like how many appeals each year, all the board's annual reports are online, so you can see information about that over the existence of the board. And then again, each spring thereabouts, Internal Affairs will put together a report on the prior year. So this spring they'll be reporting on their 2024 complaints. And then you'll get that report and get to see that as well.
Yeah, I think to Maury's question, we'll do the best we can to see enough to get a representative sample of what complaints have come in, but it will be a fraction of the total. That's kind of the point that we need to.
And the important thing to keep in mind is when you actually have an appeal, there are very strict timelines on those appeals. So that becomes a almost drop everything else on the agenda and focus on getting through those appeals at the meeting that it's scheduled for. I usually try to make sure as soon as the police give me access to the appeal file, I look through that and send out the notices to the complainant and the officer about the meeting. And I will look at the volume of material they've given you and where we are in relationship to the next meeting. And then I make a decision as to whether or not it can go on that meeting or if we need to schedule a special meeting or we can wait to the following meeting to hear it, trying to give you as much time as you can have while still keeping the statutory required timeline in order. My personal preference is to make sure you have at least a week to get through the material, but I, you know, it really will depend upon how much time the police have used out of what's allowed in the statute before it gets appealed to you all. So far that it's been okay, but I do know that depending upon, like last year was a really big year and the board had a lot of appeals and they had a lot of big appeals, like the volume of the documents and the videos, it was very time consuming. That's not the case every year. And so this part of the review of complaints that they're talking about, that you fill in when you have time. And some boards haven't had time and they've done other things and they've not touched that kind of process. This board in the last few years has been very active. Previously, it was kind of an audit function. Now it'll just be a review function. But you can fill that in as you need to, because that is not as critical and those timelines do not apply.
And I guess the other thing that I would say, Maury, is that one of the nice things about going right in right now to look at some of these appeals is there'll be, or pardon, some of these audits, some of these complaints that we're reviewing, it's great training for when we have to actually hear an appeal. So, you know, then we have to act fast and we know what the ground rules look like and have had some experience.
That clears mud now?
Clear as mud.
Good.
All right. I think we're on to number 7, new business. So we have on here budget for fiscal year 2026, and then also the brochure update. So for 2026, Rose, are we talking about like the NACOL conference, money set aside for that?
So this year is a little bit different than prior years.
Mm-hmm.
Prior years, the board would only have to request any funding they wanted above and beyond what had been in the prior year's budget. This year, they're asking us to spell out exactly what we want in what dollar amounts and to justify it. So I believe I sent out to you all the budget amounts and how much you've used. If you think you want it to be kind of similar as last year, you can just say, keep it the same as last year and we'll just submit it like that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something you want changed, increased, or decreased, then just let us know tonight what those are, and we can make that request of the finance department to include it in the city manager's budget. Eventually, so kind of the big picture is finance develops preliminary budget working with the city manager, becomes city manager, he goes through and approves his budget, that then goes to the council, and then the council approves it. The easiest way to get money is right now in this process of when they're coming up with the preliminary budget, okay? If you need additional money after council has approved the budget, then you'd have to send a report to council and justify it. But at that point, the city council would either have to find the money in your budget and transfer it to what you wanted to use it for, or they'd have to find the money in the existing city budget to then transfer into what you were asking for. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you could see from what I sent out, you had money in all the categories and you still have money in all the categories. So what you have currently probably is an okay thing to say, let's keep this going. In years past where we've seen where we've transferred funds around, it's either been like for food for the event, or it's largely been about the number of people who wanted to go to conference and where the conference was and what expenses that was. The city council is very committed to getting you all trained up and keeping you trained up. So I know that, you know, even if we had to request the funds for that, that would probably still happen. Mm-hmm. But I think your current budget for this year, if it was proposed again for next year, mm-hmm. that it has quite a bit in there that could be moved around if more people could go to conference.
What are contractual services?
So that money is kind of like for professional services. So that could be like an interpreter.
Okay.
That would might be needed, a mediator for mediation services, things of that sort. So anything we'd enter into a contract for could be paid out of that account. And I know you might have noticed, I think, was it the food budget looked higher than what was budgeted? There are categories in the within each budget. So there are line items and categories. So you could go negative on the food as long as the other ones in the category were still positive. So that also gives some flexibility without having to have council approve right. a transfer of funds.
So your recommendation is basically to take?
I would probably ask for the same amount if you all, okay. if I were you.
And we vote on that, or is that just an agreement?
You can either reach consensus or vote, whichever you'd prefer.
I do have one question on the printing. I know that we still had quite a lot of money left in it, but if we're looking at brochures and we're looking at possibly printing more things, should we move anything around to increase that or just?
I think you probably have enough in there because when the amount of brochures and rack cards that you had asked to be printed last year, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was less than $200.
It was $133.78.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you have quite a bit of money that will work for that. And I believe printing is also in a category where there's other funds.
So it says here the printing was delayed due to change in state law. So did that ever happen last year?
We did not print the brochures or rack cards and I had them redesign.
Mm-hmm.
That's what your next agenda item is, to make sure you're okay with the redesign.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, then we'll have them printed. And if you want to have a different number than what was said for last year, then you can just let me know that. But I think what you all thought of last year, the 500 business cards and the 250 panel cards,
mm-hmm.
Seemed sufficient for a first print job, and you can always have more printed. Similarly, like you had asked about the miscellaneous contractual, well, it's not printing and it's a different category. That could be something like, let's say you use up all your printing and there's nothing else left in that category, then we would just ask for the funds to be transferred from miscellaneous contractual to printing, or just reference, having a printer print the things, and then that. But it's always really helpful for the following year's budget to see how you actually spend.
Yes.
And in which categories.
I think it's hilarious that this doesn't even follow the same format as the budget for the Human Rights Commission. That would make it way too easy.
So do we want to discuss the brochure as well?
Have we settled on the...
I think I'm good with the budget continuing on. I just had the question about the printing part.
Okay.
Which one is intended to be the brochure versus the business card?
Peyton, you printed them, so
text
I don't
on
know.
So the
I believe the business card is double-sided, and the rack card is only one-sided, which... When I looked at these again, it kind of made me wonder, on the rack card part, do you want something on the back side?
Yeah, that's a waste of space.
Maybe even like, complaint form or something.
What's the scan?
QR
was that
code?
The QR code. Was that taking us to the website or the complaint
form?
I believe it takes you to your web page with, at the very top is file a complaint, file an appeal. I believe that is how they designed that. Very thank you for checking.
Goes to the Citizens Police Review Board, City of Columbia.
Yeah, and then there's a spot there to file a complaint.
Yeah, I see it.
An appeal, yeah.
In this day and age, that's huge.
QR code?
Yes.
So any discussion on the brochure? Are we good with the brochure?
I hate to print it with the entire back page left undone or blank. It seems like a waste of space. I feel like if we could revisit next month, we could come up with a lot of useful information to citizens that could be on there.
Can we push that to next month?
Yes.
Okay.
Real quick statement that I'm going to say is, I mean, I think less is more. I think if we put too much on it, people aren't going to read it.
I am not opposed to that, but I am sad that our business card is double-sided and our rat card is one-sided.
I agree with that. I just know how a lot of people work. It's like if we have too much word, you know, just stuff to read, they're not going to read it. But if there was something eye-catching on the back for sure, would be good.
So do you want to come with ideas for next month's meeting to have that on the agenda?
Even if it's just five fun facts.
Yeah. Right. When found in, you know, something.
So I will put this on next month's agenda.
Okay.
If you come up with anything that you'd want to see on the back and you email it to us beforehand, we could see if they can work up something before next month. But otherwise, you can just bring your ideas next month and then we can have them do the back of the one.
So that will be on next month's agenda. Additionally, the three substantiated items that we're going to look at and review collectively, that will be on there also for next month's agenda. Anything else? Okay. If not, then we're moving on to number 8, the reports from STEF, Human Rights Commission.
I apologize. We're going to go back to 7.3. I didn't realize we were completely finishing for next month's agenda. Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask a question. What training, do we have any training scheduled for next month or anyone?
I don't at this point, okay. But I do know you all wanted, I believe, mental health. So I need to get on that. Ideally, I think that one might draw more community involvement as well as kind of interesting speakers that we, I'm always worried about winter weather in the wintertime.
Sure.
And yeah. Resulting in a problem. So my thought would be to try and have that in line for March.
March. Totally fair.
Yeah.
That was mental health, is that correct?
Mental health. I believe, if I recall correctly, there was kind of general mental health, but then there was also the issue of dispatching of mental health calls. So I think those almost would be separate presentations, separate speakers, or maybe they're together. But I haven't reached out to anybody yet to make arrangements.
Okay.
In two different veins of the same subject, yes, I would like to learn more about our general responses from an officer here who we would employ to respond to a call like that. And then, yes, maybe an actual professional from Burrell or someone who is more involved in the community.
I'd like to also find out about any updates that the police department has on their, what is it, the
co-responder program?
Co-responders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Paul, do you have any updates for them tonight on that?
So anything more for next month's agenda? Ready to move to number 8?
Yeah, I actually have a very short report. With it being winter weather for us as well, things are slow. We are not doing a ton. Right now, next month, we are going to enter into some human rights-based training through the state of Missouri's Human Rights Commission. And we're dealing with a decent amount of employment-based complaints and housing discrimination-based complaints. But we have not been doing a lot the last couple of months just due to the holiday.
All right, so number 9, general comments by the public. So individual members of the public will be allowed 3 minutes to address the board. Representatives of groups will be allowed 5 minutes to address the board.
Renee Carter, representing Race Matters Friends, and I won't need 5 minutes. I just wanted to make a few comments. One was, I do have one suggestion for the RAC card and the business card, is that it shows you ways to file complaints, but I don't see anywhere on there how to make contact with the board if you have some other kind of question or suggestion. And maybe I was looking at it wrong, but I didn't see anything for that. But that would be a suggestion I have, is that if you don't have some kind of email contact, maybe there's an email address where questions go, and you could put it on there. Just a suggestion. And also, if I could get a copy of the PowerPoint for the Sunshine presentation, I'd appreciate that. And so, finally, I'd like to strongly suggest that you advocate finding a way to regain the lost power of this board. What you do and what you've done is very important to the citizens, and I'd really like to see, you know, you work on some kind of solution or advocate that the council do that. And I reached out to David Tyson Smith asking him to work on legislation, but so far I haven't seen anything. But anyway.
He's pre-filed a bill.
Has he?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I missed it. Anyway, great. I'm glad. Thank you so much. Anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that does it from the public. Number 10, any comments here by members and or staff?
Running the timer was not as stressful as I thought it would be.
Good job.
High five. There you go. Nice. Any comments?
Welcome back, Doug.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I just want to welcome you guys to the board. And
yeah,
Doug,
absolutely.
Welcome back to the board. And yeah. I appreciate you guys all for being here and taking time out of your night to do this.
Well, welcome.
Yep. Really awesome. Well, I'm excited to be here and be a part of what the board is going to do. Obviously, I have not been a residents of Columbia very long, but came to a few city council meetings and decided that I would like to be a good citizen and get involved,
mm-hmm.
you know, work at Mizzou, and this is a really good opportunity to get involved and do as much positive good work that I can.
Yeah.
So
thank you guys for having us. Yeah, thank you for that. So. Okay, if no more comments, then number 11, next meeting date will be the Wednesday, the 12th of February, 6:00. And beyond that.
Just need a motion to adjourn.
Oh, yes.
I'll make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you and Happy New Year.